That's bribery. Use the right word, bribery.
These institutions that are out there, you know, why aren't they promoting the languages and putting them on there?
Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations.
This episode of Groundwire was produced on Sunaik's traditional territory at Kootenai Co-op Radio in Nelson, BC.
In this episode, we hear from Chris Cook at CFUV, reporting on Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's recent visit to Victoria, BC.
Kanarji O'Sullivan from CFRO in Vancouver spoke with members of the Crab Water for Life Society and the Four Sisters Housing Co-op in the downtown east side about local objections to a proposed expansion by Port Metro Vancouver.
On the Community Radio Report, Gretchen King from CKUT reports from the first Future of First Nations, Inuit, and Métis Broadcasting Gathering held this February in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
Our music in this episode is from Colin Stetson and Sarah Neufeld's Constellation Records album, Never Were the Way She Was.
But first, her headline.
4 years ago, a tanker truck took a wrong turn onto an interior BC logging road and spilled 33,000 liters of jet fuel into Lemon Creek in the Slocan Valley. This resulted in a mass evacuation and orders not to swim in or drink from the creek or the nearby Slocan River. 8 charges were laid under the Environmental Management Act. Marilyn Burgoon provided Rachel McKenzie, host of the Ecocentric, a program heard weekly on Kootenai Co-op Radio, with an update on the case.
Last week was an arraignment hearing in the Nelson Courthouse. They were connected to the lawyers through their video setup system. At that time, the BC government, which is a defendant in the case, it's basically the federal fisheries filing a prosecution under the federal public prosecutor, represented by Mr. John Cliff. Mr. Cliff has given, through disclosure, all of the documents and listed the witnesses. So the defendants' counsel all had the materials in order to file their plea. Only the BC government filed a plea, and their plea was not guilty. The other defendants in the case are Executive Flight and the driver. The counsel for those had not had a plea ready. I should say the judge wasn't very happy that they weren't prepared with a plea and has now given them till March 7th to get their plea in. So as it stands, the court case is dragging on and going forward. However, I feel confident Mr. Cliff has done a really good job. He's got binders and binders of evidence. He has over 60 witnesses to come forward. So I'm really happy that the public prosecutor took over this case. I could never have done as good a job as I see Mr. Cliff is doing with my limited funds. And I think that we did the right thing by getting the public prosecution to take it over.
That's it for the headlines. We'll be right back after this. Thank you.
You just heard Won't Be a Thing to Become by Colin Stetson and Sarah Neufeld from their Never Were the Way She Was album on Constellation Records.
Now it's time for our feature stories.
Prime Minister Justin Trudeau visited Victoria recently to speak with Mayor Lisa Helps about infrastructure. Chris Cook from Guerrilla Radio at CFUV spoke with individuals who came to meet him and bring issues to the government's attention.
So it's March 2nd, noon in the noon hour, down here at Centennial Square in the city of Victoria. The city's having an esteemed visitor today. Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of the country, will be here. Ostensibly, he's going to be meeting with the mayor to discuss infrastructure issues and the like. There's also going to be, predictably enough, demonstrations and demonstrators here. So there will be people here, and I'll see if I can talk to some of them. So another of the issues, there's many, of course, is the Site C Dam in the northeast of the province. I'm standing out here in front of City Hall, and you've got a Site C, or a no Site C, I should say, button. Can you tell me first who you are and who you represent?
I'm Terry Dance-Spennick, and I'm a volunteer with Sierra Club and the Rolling Justice Bus. And we're the folks who went up to Paddle the Peace last summer and saw firsthand what's going on up there, and we are totally opposed to this $9 billion project that's going to cost taxpayers far more than $9 billion, raise our hydro rates, and it's going to flood beautiful farmland that could feed a million people, and also flouts the First Nations rights, and that really concerned us. We met with some First Nation people, and they are really, they've launched legal challenges, and they just feel that Trudeau and Christy Clark have flouted. You know, they say they respect Indigenous rights, but they're not in practice.
Well, of course, the Prime Minister is going to be here any moment here.
Exactly.
Would you be here anyway, or you're here especially to see him?
We're here especially to see him, but also we go every Thursday to the Trans-Canada Highway and wave this banner. Last week, 451 cars honked in support. It's all people going out to Colwood, Langford. So the people care. People, you know, they know that this is a boondoggle.
Well, thanks a lot for talking to me.
Thank you.
All right, so there's some other rabble here, and one says, I'd like resident orcas to be here when the oil is gone. Oh, that's a good sentiment. Can you tell me who you guys are and what's your why you're here?
Hi, I'm Gina Nikoloff. I'm a marine biology student at the University of Victoria. And I think that the orcas aren't being considered fully in this decision. Not only is an oil spill detrimental to the orcas' health, but the noise pollution with the 5 times increase in tanker traffic is also a huge concern for their communication and their feeding patterns. So I think that Justin Trudeau needs to think more about that for our local economy and our local wildlife.
Well, last year there was a lot of optimism. There was new calving, there was new calves born, the population. This year it seems different. There are dead whales. Do we know why these whales are dying?
Climate change may be a factor, but it's very unknown what is happening actually with those whale deaths. Factors such as the blob, the massive warm water that was off the coast of Vancouver Island in 2013 to 2015, may have been a factor in increasing parasites and disease. It's not fully known, and that's why protection at this time is so important.
Well, and I see your side says that climate leaders don't build pipelines, but the leader of our country said okay to the Kinder Morgan pipeline.
Yeah, and this is like making it so that we are not able to meet our climate targets, which we discussed in Paris, and I think that this is just completely the wrong decision and very detrimental to the environment. So,
well, what's your overall impression of our photogenic Prime Minister so far?
Yeah, I mean, very photogenic, but I think a lot of his promises are definitely he's falling short on. Electoral reform, this pipeline, there was evidence last year in a video of him saying that Kinder Morgan would not go forward, and he just does not seem to be able to stick to what he said. A lot of people voted for him based on his environmental policies, based on the electoral reform, and he's just alienating a lot of young voters, for sure, who now are not able to have faith in our democratic system. If our elected officials don't stick to their platforms, their policy platforms, I mean, it's an unfortunate and very frustrating situation to see our democracy.
Well, thanks a lot for talking to me.
Thank you.
It seems that our Prime Minister has lost a lot of support out here in the West with these pronouncements and others. And it's going to be a very rough ride for the Liberals the next go-around in an already difficult province.
Moving now to Vancouver, Gunnar G. O'Sullivan from Vancouver Co-op Radio spoke with people gathered in the downtown east side to oppose a proposed Port Vancouver expansion project.
Port Metro Vancouver is planning a $320 million expansion of a Centrum container terminal just east of the downtown Vancouver Peninsula on the South Shore Burrard Inlet. But many downtown east side residents worry that this will mean increased danger due to shipping toxic chemicals through residential areas. Cliff Stewart, the Vice President of Infrastructure at Port Metro Vancouver, says the Centrum project is among a series of port expansions on the BC coast planned to meet perceived short-term capacity needs by the end of the 2030s. Vancouver Co-op Radio's Gunnar G. O'Sullivan spoke with several protesters at a rally opposing the expansion on March 2nd on Alexander Street in Vancouver.
My name's Don Larson. We're at a rally. There's about maybe 30, 40 people here. This is a so-called open house for the Port of Vancouver to promote and push their Centrum expansion in front of Crab Park, which is going to destroy the quality of the park. And there's also danger with the Port of Vancouver and the federal government with their rail cars of hazardous cargo that go by here day in, day out. And we want that to stop. So that's why I'm here today. And we got a good group out here and a couple banners. So I guess we're not going in for the cookies and the cake and all the other stuff.
And why do you want to stop Centrum?
Why do we want to stop them?
Stop them because they're going to absolutely destroy the ambience of the park and endanger the health and safety of the people of the whole area. 2 years ago, there was a toxic fire at that particular container terminal. Actually, Don can tell you all about the hazardous. Did you? So it's two things. Like, it's the only access to green space for the people of the downtown east side. And it's also the only green space on Vancouver's central waterfront. The closest other public green space on that waterfront is Cole Harbour, and then to the east, it's New Brighton. So the Iron Workers Memorial, basically.
Yeah.
There's nothing else there, and they just want to destroy that. And it's, I mean, this is a world-class park, with an international award-winning park, and they just have no consideration whatsoever for the public or the environment. I know it's not the same, you know, it's the drinking water we're talking about our park, but this is a really hard-edged neighborhood, and to have that safety valve, having that access to peace and to tranquility and to the, you know, healing power of nature is absolutely crucial. I'm the spokeswoman for Four Sisters Co-op, which is just down the street, and it's, we've got more than 250 residents there, so I'm speaking officially on their behalf.
Uh-huh.
Appreciate it.
And who are you? Are you friends of the water?
Yes, I am. I live at the Four Sisters. My name is Kiva, and I actually grew up at the Four Sisters, and Crab Park was where I first, you know, got on a swing. It was the first, like, place that I played in a playground and, you know, found, you know, sea creatures on the shore.
Yeah.
So all my, like, majority of my childhood memories are actually at Crab Park.
Mm-hmm.
And, I have a lot of fun memories there. It's the only place in the area that you can really go for spiritual nourishment from nature.
Uh-huh.
The view is absolutely incredible. I mean, you know, you've got the beautiful mountains. It's really, like, purifying going down there. It's like the only place that you get a break from the, like, claustrophobia of the city.
Yeah.
And it's a spectacular little park. And without it, you know, Gastown is going to lose, like, a really, really important place for people to go to for, like, peace and calmness.
Uh-huh.
It's really important for everyone in the area to have somewhere like that to go to.
RG also spoke with Don Larson of the Crab Water for Life Society after the rally.
They're not willing to change anything in that brochure. That's the bottom line. The only thing that they're talking about is a word that I have to go get a dictionary, but mitigation. And what it really means is that they're willing to bribe some people in the downtown Eastside Strathcona area, organizations, the Port of Vancouver, and will throw Crown Corporation, the federal government, will throw money at some organizations. And that's going to be mitigation. That's bribery. Use the right word, bribery.
If approved by Fisheries and Oceans Canada after Port Metro Zone review process, construction on the project could begin in early 2017 and be complete in late 2019. If you want to find out more about the work of the Crab Water for Life Society, you can find their Facebook page at Save Crab Park. To read the Port of Vancouver's project description, go to porttalk.ca, Centrum Expansion. This is Catherine Fisher reporting for Groundwire. Groundwire thanks Gennargi O'Sullivan and Vancouver Co-op Radio for files.
Now it's time for a community radio report.
Gretchen King from CKUT reports from the first of five planned Future of First Nations, Inuit, and Métis broadcasting gatherings held this February in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
What is the future of First Nations, Inuit, and Métis broadcasting? Indigenous broadcasters are answering this question in five regional events convening across Canada. Winnipeg's University of Manitoba was the host of the kickoff event held in February. The campus community station, UMFM 101.5, was there to live stream the event.
I remember many, many, many years ago, and that's maybe not that many. many. I was listening. There was no Indigenous people on the CBC, and yet I was always tuned in to the CBC. I'm not exactly sure why. But I was listening on a Saturday morning, and it was a non-Indigenous person telling our story. And, of course, it was just filled with just colonial nonsense. And, you know, it just kind of underscored that just is so important, the importance of having people telling our stories. And I think that we're still in that change and making that shift. But it's to the, you know, really to the people who have come together today. And of course, people that have left us along the way, and the people that are just picking up this bundle, this important bundle of communication to continue this, because we're not there yet.
Leslie, it's always a good gathering when Leslie is around. Thank you for your beautiful words.
You just heard the voices of Leslie Spillett and Professor Kathleen Buttle, who opened the day. Indigenous media makers with years of experience identified several challenges for the sector.
Grateful that radio stations like NCIFM are around, because 20 years ago, there was no Indigenous voice in mainstream media. There was no Indigenous story. They refused to do those stories because racism, and sexism and patriarchy refused to share their pages with our stories. I remember working in newsrooms at newspapers and being told, well, you don't want to do that story. You don't want to ghettoize yourself. You don't want to be the Indian beat reporter. And I would say, on the contrary, of course I want to be the Indian beat reporter, because there isn't one.
but they would have that beat report, but it wasn't. We couldn't be those beat reporters because we would have a bias. Yeah. So they would not let us tell our own stories, even though they had the native beat.
My community in trouble. I lived below the Homolon Line. And if you don't know the existence of the Homolon Line in the 70s by the Secretary of State, they cut the country in half, north from south, and said, okay, we're gonna institute television and radio to these northern communities so they can maintain their culture, ways, and language. And all the ones in the south, all the tribes, and that's all half of us, 300 tribes, are going to amalgamate in Canadian society. Well, we didn't amalgamate, and 1990 was a perfect case in point in terms of the Oka conflict. So, you know, I encourage you to support Native broadcasting, but at the same time, I need you to pressure them to be for real, like for real. No holds bar.
You know, 6 months later when Streets launched, it launched with all Indigenous youth behind the microphone, you know. And, you know, giving people an opportunity, I'm not sure exactly where everybody is now, whether they continued on working in that. But within a very short period of time, very young people, some of them with their first jobs, proved that they could handle this job. And so, I mean, I always feel that way. I mean, I've got seven grandchildren, and they constantly, I can't believe the stuff that they know and that they think and stuff like that. So, I mean, I feel like they're already smarter than me, you know. So I know that our youth and this next generation is, but we have to give them the opportunities. We have to save them. We have to give them some kind of hope, you know, and we have to let them know that their truth matters. They're not all liars. You know what I mean? Like,
you just heard the voices of Rosanna Deerchild, Kim Wheeler, Gary Former, and Miles Morisseau. Leonard Monkman, MP Robert Falcon-Ouellette, and Jim Compton commented on the importance of media making in indigenous languages.
The more people that you see investing into small cameras, equipment, radio, podcasting equipment, all of these different things, that's the only place where we're going to be able to see our languages being reflected. You know, it's not going to come from anywhere else. It's not going to come from anyone else. It's just going to come from us.
You know, currently the government has an Aboriginal Languages Program. It's funded under about $5 million. It's been like that for the last 20 years. I remember Melanie Jolly, the new Minister of Heritage, she comes to see the Indigenous Caucus and she says, well, what should we do? And, you know, we had the opportunity of saying, well, you know, these, you know, we want to see change in this. We're not very happy with this situation. We think these languages aren't doing very well. And, you know, we pushed her and pushed her. And I think she listened. And then all of a sudden, just before Christmas, at the special assembly of the Assembly of First Nations in Gatineau in Quebec, Prime Minister gets up and he makes an announcement that we're going to have an official Indigenous Languages Act for the very first time in this country. Now that is, you know, now what's going to be in the act is a big question.
But, you know, wouldn't it be nice to see the languages on CBC, on, you know, NFB, Telefilm? You know, we got them on APTN, but, you know, these institutions that are out there, you know, why aren't they promoting the languages and putting them on there? I mean, I think that's where a big part of the answer is doing that, just that. And licensing them with money, you know. So.
Participants were also asked what changes are needed in public policies to support Indigenous media.
And, of course, like you say, CanCon didn't work in the first 10 years because... You know, there wasn't. It needed the second generation for to take into effect,
and
that's
and
like
a pushback,
any plan, right? You know? So, like, I mean, I think we should. That would be a reconciliation policy.
Yeah, absolutely.
By saying, oh no, all radio stations now have to have 2 to 5% Indigenous content.
Oh, I think we could go higher. There's no problem. I mean, I never have any problems filling 2 hours.
To check out the audio and Twitter archive, photo or text reports from the Future of First Nations, Inuit, and Métis Broadcasting event in Winnipeg, visit www.indigenousradio.ca. The conversation will continue in Iqaluit Nunavut on April 12th in the lead-up to the National Conference on First Nations, Inuit, and Métis Broadcasting being hosted in Ottawa this June. This report was produced for Groundwire by Gretchen King from CKUT Radio in Montreal, broadcasting from Mohawk Land with audio files from UMFM in Winnipeg. Thank you.
You just heard In the Vespers by Colin Stetson and Sarah Neufeld.
That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced at Kootenai Co-op Radio on Sinek's traditional territory in Nelson, B.C.
Music this week was by Colin Stetson and Sarah Neufeld. Our headline this week was written by Catherine Fisher.
We also thank Chris Cook from Guerrilla Radio at CFUV in Victoria, B.C., Gennarji O'Sullivan at Vancouver Co-op Radio, and Gretchen King at CKUT in Montreal. Thanks as well to Braden Alexander and Ome Samarahemtala from the Groundwire production team.
Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station or download at groundwirenews.ca.